I knew that there should be something here local for Wisconsin, and that there was just other people like me who needed support. I remember constantly saying, was my mom is more than a picture on a poster. And I just wanted someone to care that she was my mom. She was a person.
Right now, there are more than 200 people across Wisconsin who are missing, and that number changes every day. In fact, according to the Wisconsin Missing Person Advocacy Inc., who we'll hear from a little later on, 30 people are reported missing every month. Some people are found and others are not. As part of our monthly podcast, Forgotten, we've explored the cases of 15 people from across central and north central Wisconsin. They are Edward Sherwoney, Cindy Jones, Stacy Rudolph, Mackenzie Markin, Janelle Marquard, Dakota and Dana Menger, Marie and Theodore Jost, Ben Wilberding, John Jake Morgan, Cassandra Aon, Marshall Hansen, Kayla Berg, and Jacob Wenzel. And I am your host, Cassandra Cepeda. And as you can already tell, this isn't our typical episode of Forgotten. This month, we are celebrating our one-year anniversary. So I thought it would be a good time to go over some of the most common questions that we get asked as we developed this series, and give you a preview for what's coming up in the next 12 months. But before I get to that, there's something important I need to point out. Or rather, someone. I don't do this alone. If you have listened to other episodes, you may have heard me talk about Sean White. Say hi.
Hello.
Sean is the editor of the podcast, my sounding board, proofreader, research assistant, web editor, or whatever else I ask of him. Seriously, the guy wears a lot of hats. But most importantly, he edits the audio for each episode. So without him, you wouldn't have anything to listen to. Sean, why don't you talk about how we put together each episode?
Yeah, so we cover people from central Wisconsin, get interviews with authorities, family, or friends if we can. Cassandra will go through her countless hours of interviews and fish out the big pieces of information, put her script together, and record it on a voice track. Then I use that script for not just the online website article, but for editing the podcast version by cutting the collection of sound bites and interviews, along with any sound effects and music, until I upload the finished product, which everyone listens to. With all that said, Cassandra, one question you get asked a lot is how we got started.
Yeah, that's probably the number one question. Some of you who listen might know that this isn't my full-time job. Monday through Friday, I'm an anchor and producer at WSAW News Channel 7 in Wausau, Wisconsin. When not working, I am an avid listener to other podcasts. Crime Junkie, Red Handed, Something Was Wrong, and Up and Vanished are just a few of my favorites, so go check them out. But I never really thought I would be producing my own. It was my news director's idea to turn the series into a podcast. From the very beginning, I wanted to make it clear. It has never been my intention to solve the cases we cover. I'm not a detective, but I do have a passion for people in my community. I grew up in Stevens Point, which is pretty much smack dab in the middle of Wisconsin. After starting my research, I realized there were two people near my hometown who hadn't been seen in years, maybe even decades, and I had no clue they were even missing. So it's my goal to make sure each person we talk about is never forgotten, hence the name of the podcast. Another one of my strengths is the platform I've been given through my job. I'm proud to say that over just 13 episodes, we have had more than 7,300 downloads from across the country, some even out of the U.S. As I reflected on the cases we've worked on, I was wondering, Sean, is there a case that you still think about?
Stacy Rudolph. I think just how Dwayne explained that even though he and Lori divorced, everything seemed cordial between them, and sharing time with Stacy, it just seemed very out of the blue when you look at the time of events that Stacy would have just up and disappeared. And then getting the letter in the mail from Lori really got to me. Because it wasn't just a spur of the moment thing for Lori. She definitely took the time and thought about what she would write in the letter and took time to actually write it and mail it. Did Stacy know that her mom would take her away from her dad? Maybe, but based on how Dwayne described their relationship, I would be willing to bet that Stacy would have said something to her dad if she knew. And now Dwayne and his new family are just left answerless to a lot of their questions. What about you?
Oh my gosh, I think I spiral a little bit on each of the cases. But the one that really left me with a lot of questions was about the two women and one of their children. I'm talking about Janelle Marquard and Dakota and Dana Menger from Dakusa. We covered their case back in August of 2023. The three were last seen in August of 1999, but they weren't reported missing until 5 years later in 2004, which is just bonkers to me. And to be clear, I'm not blaming their family. Police were aware that Dana had not picked up one of her children from the babysitters. Dana's parole officer even called police, which led to a search of Dana's apartment, which had to be emptied because she never returned. These are big red flags to me. It was also something I pressed the police on but never really got an answer to. And I know hindsight is 20/20, but it just seems like a huge oversight. And I can't help but wonder why their disappearances weren't addressed sooner and what the outcome would be today had police started investigating right away. Now, if you're confused about what I'm talking about, please go over to WSAW.com and click the podcast tab or download it and let me know if you have any questions like I still do. Speaking of questions, I know some people are a little leery when it comes to listening to true crime. Sean, what is one thing that you would say to someone who is unsure if they should listen to our podcast?
I think the biggest thing is, what if you knew something about one of our cases, or could a case lead you to better protect you or your family? Meeting with the different family members, these are people you could see anywhere in your community, and you would have no idea that this happened to them. Like we've said before, our podcast is not so that we can be credited with solving something. We just want to make sure these people, who are somebody's mother or sibling or grandparent, that there are people still looking and still trying to bring them home. We both know that we put in a lot of work for each one of these episodes. As I'm sure with many of our listeners who may have a favorite episode, Cassandra, what's one you maybe look or listen back on and say, I'm proud of myself for doing that?
Yeah. Cassandra Aeon, Justicia Inconclusa, aka Cassandra Aeon, Unfinished Justice. It's the first and only podcast of ours done in another language. In this case, Cassandra Aeon and her killer are members of the Spanish-speaking community in Clark County. And when I thought about what we were doing, the goal is to have as many people as possible listen, right? But I realized for this one, the English language might be a barrier, especially for people who may be directly connected to this case. So I reached out to a branch of our company called Investigate TV en Español. Sean and I worked with their staff to accurately translate the entire episode into Spanish. It's something I am so proud that we were able to do. What about you?
Cindy Jones. She went missing in 1984 after a domestic incident with her husband. And for me, formerly working in law enforcement while in the military, I've been a part of some domestic violence response training. I know training evolves over time, but I guess I just assumed that the major chunks of the training and essentially the response for real life scenarios had been done for longer than since 1984. But when we found out Wisconsin's domestic laws regarding police response, it was pretty shocking. Knowing that police came to the house after being called for the incident and then left without entering the home was crazy to me, but there wasn't anything as far as for the law that required police to enter the home at that time. And this was just our second episode, so it really opened my eyes to how even just a tiny bit of research by us can go a long way. But what's something you learned about yourself through this podcast?
Honestly, I'm terrified that someone I love will disappear. I mean, it's not a secret that police departments are often understaffed and overworked. Most, because of their size and funding, don't have a cold case team or dedicated staff that only work on unsolved or missing person cases. That said, I thought it was time to talk about what we can do. I know none of us want to think about losing a child or a loved one, but the reality is, it does happen.
Do you have a current number or ballpark number of how many people are missing in Wisconsin right now?
I can tell you it's more than 220. I don't have an exact number right now. We were working on adding, just before I came on with you today, I added 5 new people just for today. It's a number, but when you can look at each month, like how many people, you know, it seems to be the trend, about 30 people go missing every month. And that's just the ones that we're finding. So, I have several volunteers working on helping me keep track of this information.
So what can we do? Through my research, I found an incredible resource called the Wisconsin Missing Persons Advocacy, Inc. The voice you just heard is Marsha Loritz. She is the president and founder of the organization. And you should know up front that this is not just some hobby of hers. It's a passion project, and it's personal.
Well, this is my second job. This is, I have a full-time job. All of us here at Wisconsin Missing Persons are volunteers. Really? So we all have other jobs, and then we just do this because we want to help. And 2 of us have missing loved ones.
Marsha's mom, Victoria Prokopovitz, disappeared April 25th, 2013. She was last seen in her home in Pittsville. In February of 2021, James Prokopovitz, Marsha's father and Victoria's husband, was found guilty of first-degree intentional homicide and resisting and obstructing. But Victoria still hasn't been found. I will include a link about her case at WSAW.com if you want to learn more. In 2014, then-Governor Scott Walker granted a proclamation for Missing Persons Awareness Month, and it's been recognized every year since. In 2017, Marsha founded WMPA, Inc.
It's just something that I didn't plan on, but through my personal experience, was able to take the pain that I suffer and the feeling of helplessness and help support others.
If someone has a loved one that goes missing, what are the first steps that they should do? And then maybe what are the things that they shouldn't do?
If you actually believe that something has happened to your loved one and that they could be in danger or that they are missing, you can report it right away. You don't need to wait any certain amount of time. To have the most current photo is important, to have a description maybe of what they were last seen, where they were, those kinds of things are so important. Knowing like their social media, you know, when they, you know, maybe they were active on their social media, or it's been a while since they've been active on their social media. Who have they been in contact with? You know, that's all very important. I always tell the families to start a notebook and just start writing things down, because you remember things in the middle of the night or when you're driving down the road, or something, you can, you know, pull over and write something down, like, I need to remember to follow up on this. Starting a Facebook page for that missing person, if it's been a period of time that they're still missing, can help put the information out there, but help keep family and friends who are trying to help involved and up to date, instead of having to call everybody or text everybody. Because when you're in this situation, self-care really takes a back seat. You really get tired fast. You are not sleeping, you're not eating, those kinds of things. And just to have one place to put this information is helpful.
Marsha also stressed how important it is to have a good working relationship with law enforcement, even when it isn't easy, emphasizing that communication is key.
One thing when I say keeping in contact with law enforcement is asking law enforcement how they would like you to contact them. I mean, do they want you to call them? Do they want to do it by email? Because they are busy as well. So that is helpful. You need to be patient with them, because they have a huge task trying to find your loved one. And even though you think that maybe they aren't doing what you think that they should be doing, they also have many other cases, but they are doing everything they can to try to help, and they have a process. And so keeping an open door with them is good. And then you also have to be careful of, you know, where you turn so that you don't get taken advantage of.
Have you encountered that from people that they do get taken advantage of?
There are psychics that want to ask for money. There are search teams that will ask for money. Most search and rescue teams will not ever charge you. But a family that finds themselves in this situation would never know that.
Everything she said is so important, but what about before disaster strikes? Is there anything we can do? Here's her advice.
You know, there's so many reasons people go missing, right? You know, yeah. It's not always like foul play or anything like that, but knowing where someone is and knowing when they're expected back is really important because if you go out anywhere and you don't return, at least someone already has it on their target that this is where they said they were going and this is when they said they were going to be back. That's helpful. Having a current photo is helpful. If you have children, knowing what apps they're on, who they're talking with, that's really important. Being aware when you're out in public of your surroundings, if you feel uncomfortable, taking the extra precautions of maybe not going somewhere alone.
April is an incredibly busy time for WMPA. Right now, they're preparing their electronic billboard campaign, which will feature every missing person listed in their database. And the best part? Families won't have to pay a thing. It's a resource that didn't exist for Marsha when her mom went missing.
We fundraise all year round to provide these. I myself fund our family wanted to do a billboard, and it was very expensive, and we had to make the choice. Do we want to pay for a billboard for a year, or do we want to offer a reward? Mm-hmm. And to have one billboard in one location, you had to pick the right location to know that you were going to have it seen and have it pay off. And so that was a little bit daunting. So we chose to run a reward instead.
For 1 year, we have opened the cases of missing people from central and north central Wisconsin. But we decided to do things a little different going forward. Sean, why don't you talk about what we have cooking?
All right, so for our next season, you could call it, we're focusing on unsolved cases. You might ask, well, how's that different from what we do now? And the most obvious is that these upcoming episodes, our focal person has already been found, but their killer hasn't. These upcoming episodes deal with victims who were murdered or whose remains were found years or decades later. Then we have Tara Sullivan coming up, who only went missing last April, and it's a total mystery on what happened to her. However, we were recently asked by the Marathon County Sheriff's Office if we would be willing to bring some community awareness to her case. Of course, we said yes to that. Tara lived in Weston and worked out of the Fox Valley in real estate. Marathon County deputies believed her disappearance was suspicious from the start, and those suspicions grew once they located her car in Shawano County. A lot of unknowns surround Tara's case, and we'll see if there's any new update. Lastly, I want to point out, too, we were invited to take part in the upcoming Missing Persons Awareness event in Green Bay. It's a little bittersweet because you'd hope that events like this wouldn't have to take place, but it was a nice surprise that we were invited to showcase what we do, and different organizations are seeing the benefit of what we've been doing for the past year. If any of our listeners and viewers want to check it out, you can visit the allevents.in website and click on the April 27 icon in the calendar bar at the top of the page. And at the top of the next page will be the Missing Persons event tab with all the information in it. We will also have the event link on our website article, so whenever the podcast gets posted and published, we will have the event page up there for anybody to check it out.
The feedback that we get after the event from the families that are there, they finally feel like they have this little group of people that, even if they don't really know them, they know them. They feel understood and like they don't even have to explain themselves. And they have that support that they've been searching for. And then the community is very surprised at the number of people missing. So we'll have all of the missing persons that are listed in a database, all their flyers up on a wall. And a number is just a number until you see those flyers all on one wall.
The Wisconsin Missing Persons Advocacy is always looking for volunteers and donations. If you would like to help or are interested in learning more about the organization, we have included a link on our website. And for everyone who has listened or shared our content, you are helping to keep every missing person's memory alive. And just maybe, you have the information to help bring resolution to a case. Thank you for helping us to remember the forgotten.